to see you, man.
I know. It's been a while, huh? How you
it
doing?
It has been a while. It has been a while. How's it going?
I'm great, dude. I have been jamming to my new favorite Spotify playlist all day, and I'll give you two guesses what you think it is. Let's just go with names.
Like actual artists? Like the title of the playlist or the artist?
Title of the playlist. Or genre. I'll give you that, too, if you're anywhere close to the genre.
I'm going to say, like yoga, meditation, like Zen.
I mean, I do listen to that a lot, but that's not what I've been jamming to. You are kind of in the ballpark with that. You got another guess?
Okay. So I was actually going to, if that was wrong, I was going to go the exact opposite end of the spectrum and be like heavy metal, death punk, like Metallica. But since we're in the, I'm going to say something like smooth jazz. Miles Davis.
I am a big fan of Bill Evans, but that's not today. Today, okay. You want to know what it is?
What is it today?
Gregorian chant.
Okay. You know, that is not surprising to me at all. That is not surprising.
And
it's like very melodic, slow hum.
Dude, it helps me get work done, man. Like, it is so useful. And here's why I'll say that you were in the building when you said the yoga and meditation, because it's not just Gregorian chants. It's Gregorian chants at 432 hertz. You know how they do those where they're like, oh, this is special heart vibration,
right,
or frequency.
Right. So it's like in sync with your like circadian rhythm or something like that, or whatever.
Exactly.
The hell.
Just gets those theta brainwaves going, or the alpha brainwaves. I don't even know what brainwaves I want going, but it gets them going.
My favorite pseudoscience.
Exactly.
People don't know anything about the human body. It's like, I'm reading this book about like longevity and how to like live a longer, healthier life. And it's just, it's so unclear. Like everything is kind of like hypothesis. And I think like a lot of nutritionists make hypotheses. You know, there's like 17 different kinds of diets you can do that are like the best thing for you, from keto to paleo to cardio.
Vegan. So here's the ones that I subscribe to. Then later you can tell me yours.
Okay.
I do the intermittent fasting and vegetarian, but pretty much vegan.
Okay. So you don't eat till like 2 p.m. or something like that?
I'll eat. My window is usually from like 12 to 6.
12 to 6, okay.
Unless I do like a sauna in the afternoon, night, and then it's kind of hard not to eat after that.
Yeah.
But yeah, in general, whenever I eat at night, man, I just feel like crap in the morning.
So this actually, like, you again, it's hard to tell whether it's a placebo or not, but you actually
feel better. Yeah, exactly. I have no idea because I've been doing it for so long now. It's been like 3 or 4 years that I've been doing this for. So I have no idea if it's just like when I eat at night, I'm like, oh, I shouldn't be eating. Oh, but it's so good. And then I feel guilty and my body does that, total placebo. Or if it's actually like my body's circadian rhythm says, hey, you shouldn't do this.
Yeah, you're just being self-righteous. That's what's going on here. You're one of those people that smells their own farts. You know what I mean?
Exactly. And I analyze it with another pseudoscience. Those are that's exactly what it is. But dude, you know what? This time of the year, it might be one of my favorite times of the year because the leaves are changing colors. I know you don't get this in your privileged position right outside of Stanford or wherever the hell you are in California. You don't get any leaves changing colors, do you?
No.
So all kinds of leaves changing colors. It's getting cold enough for me to be like, all right, cool. There's a change here happening. And you start to feel that. And I get to wear the absurd sweater collection that I have that I invested
into. Sweaters and whatnot.
This one, my wife's mom handmade like in the 60s or 70s. And last time I was back and we were visiting them, she was like, oh, yeah, I got all these sweaters that I made for my brother and then he died. And now I have them again. Do you want them? I'm like, oh, jackpot. Here we go. They're so warm. They are so warm, dude.
Yeah. Like wool sweaters or something Yeah.
And made back in the day, like with a lot of love and care. And so.
Yes. That adds an extra layer of warmth for sure.
Yeah, totally. Dude.
Oh, dude, I appreciate this. I'd spent a few years on the East Coast where you get the, I mean, like, look, as beautiful as like California is, and it's like year long, you just have the best weather always. I will say, when I was in the East Coast, and you have those brutal winters, like brutal, brutal winters, that transition from a winter to a spring, when like for the first time, like that, there's like nothing that compares to that. Like, there's not a single day in California is like a 7 or 8 all the time. That's like a 9.5. You know, yeah, what I mean,
that's
like
off the Richter scale for sure. You. Like, not only you are happy, but everywhere you go, everyone's happy. And so it just adds to the collective vibe.
That's right. That's right. Yeah, it's amazing. It's amazing. Yeah,
I feel that. And then flowers are coming out. And
flowers are coming out. Oh, my God.
Colors.
Snow starts to thaw. And then you like start, like things start to bloom. You're like, oh, man, this is, after that, maybe it's the delta. Maybe it's going from like, wow, that was so painful and freezing cold, to like, wow, I just feel amazing right now.
Exactly.
But it's nothing compares. Nothing compares for sure.
Yeah. All right, dude. So this is the catch-up episode. I feel like it's been too long since we chatted.
Yeah.
And you've been on here many a times as a co-host. And then you went to start. Can we give people the background? Like,
yeah,
you were focusing on starting something in the NLP space before the ChatGPT boom.
Right.
You're
right,
like, hey, I can do something around data quality and labeling. And then you went to try and raise, and the VCs were like, we don't want anything to do with that. I remember you quoting me one time that you met with 60 VCs and nobody said yes.
That was so, rough time, yeah, for sure.
Yeah, I can imagine that would get your spirits down a little bit, and you would start wondering, is it me or is it the idea? And you a fighter, and you said, it is the idea. It's not.
That's right. That's the way to avoid any sort of introspection. Just being like, nope, I'm definitely not the problem. Definitely not.
Exactly. So then you pivoted, and it was right around the time that I went and I was working for Stability AI, and you were like, I think I can do something in the image generation space.
Yeah. Yeah.
So our paths continued to intertwine in that light, and we ended up doing stuff, and I think we both have since pivoted away from, well, I know I have, I'm pretty sure you have pivoted away from doing anything with Stability, not image generation though, you're still doing stuff there, but
right,
there's all these questions that I wanted to explore when it comes to building a business in the image generation space. We talk a lot on the podcast recently about LLMs, and so this is for all those people who are like, fuck me, another LLMs podcast, I don't want to hear it. Don't worry, folks. We've got you covered, because my man Mikhail is here to talk about the image generation and just give us the background on what you've been up to.
Yeah.
And, oh yeah, I should probably tell folks like that didn't hear you or don't know about you. You were, before you went and tried to start the NLP thing, you were working at Amazon on Amazon Alexa.
Yeah.
You were you went to Stanford, you graduated Stanford. So you've got the credentials, which makes me think that when it comes to raising money, it would have been easy if idea was good enough.
So I'm saying, it's always the idea. It's never
the idea. It was not you.
No, I'm facetious, of course.
I think you even had me on the deck or something as an advisor. And so it should have been a home run, man.
Yeah.
So yeah, it must have been.
That's right. That's
it must have been a really bad idea. No, but give me the breakdown. Like, what have you done since?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. So, I mean, I think the first part of the intro is very on point. This was MLOps play, data play. Maybe a tad too late, honestly. And, you know, I'm sure these days you talk a lot about LLM ops, but there was a predecessor to this, ML ops. And I'm sure we can wax philosophical on what exactly is the difference between the two. Are they the same? What's really changed, if anything at all? But this was largely an ML ops play before LLM ops in data, focusing on unstructured data. And I think it was just a little too late. I mean, it just got to the point where there were too many players in the space. The data probably wasn't differentiated enough at the time, even though I still, a lot of like the hypotheses that I had about data and data quality, I think still will hold true and still will play out in the long run. It's just
like, what?
Well, primarily that, like, I think a lot of it still has to go end to end, right? That's in the sense that you have to kind of start from, like, you know, I was starting from, like, labeling, like, trying to solve the labeling problem, and then expect that once you solve the labeling and you build out through the rest of the stack, you'll start to hit into issues around increasing the quality of the data through a training run, through serving, when you start getting predictions from models, and then how do you kind of pipe that all back into maybe even the labeling getting improved. So it's like this virtuous cycle where just because you start at the annotation, you go all the way through training, you go through serving, and then you get predictions, you kind of need to bring all that information back in. And I suspect a lot of that will still play out. And in a sense, this is like how a lot of MLOps companies have sort of evolved their offering is, yep. You know, they start with this like one niche and they all are kind of having to go end to end because they want to own as much of that value stack, that value chain that they can. And there, you have to go either left or right, depending on where you start, right? I think that will still play out.
Yeah, it's you have to wedge yourself in there somehow and then try and eat up market share.
That's right.
Just start eating more.
And some people, I mean, I think some companies have made it easier for themselves and some have made it harder. I mean, at the time that I was doing it, I was like, you got to start at the beginning. You got to start at labeling. You solve labeling and then you're good. And to be honest, like a lot of the VCs at the time they're like, you know, doing a labeling company in 2022, it's like, it's a tough sell right now. It's really like a tough sell. There's just too many of these players out here and you really need to come in with something drastic.
Not only were there too many, but there was too many that weren't making money.
Right, right. It was tough to differentiate. And so kind of went back to the drawing board. This was around the time that Stability had actually just released their first model, right? The first like open source version. I mean, DALL-E 2 had been around, but the idea of an open source image gen model had not yet been around. And it was at this time that I also met my now co-founder, who I want to give a shout out to, Julia. Super awesome person, definitely one of the most talented engineers and just thinkers I've ever had the pleasure of working with. Super great.
How'd you meet her?
Actually through a mutual friend. So we were both kind of iterating on ideas in broadly LLMs and kind of Gen AI. You know, her background is also technologist, but she was at Google Research for the greater part of a decade and was just someone that had, you know, really done a lot of really great work. And had built, she actually was on the BERT team, right? So the BERT, which is like the predecessor to all this GPT
stuff.
It's
the workhorse.
Yeah, exactly. The workhorse, like Transformers galore back when before Transformers were a thing. And so she really built out her career there doing great work and was very fortunate to kind of be exploring at the same time that I was exploring. And so we, you know, we're technologists. We validate relationships by building things with people, as I think you should in general. I mean, I think it's just generally when people come to you like, oh, I'm co-founder dating, I think you have to spend time to build something with someone, even if it's not both coders. You have to come into the conflict, basically. You have to like, hey, we have deadlines, we have things that we need to make and meet at certain time frames. And so we did that, right? For technologists, it's easy to just say we're going to pick and build something. And so we both had experience in kind of multimodal applications at our last jobs. Like I'd focused a lot on dialogue systems, like pure textual dialogue. A lot of what we were thinking about as well was how we can combine like text and other modalities like image. You know, we were thinking a lot about how can we put Alexa on like haptic devices and like robots and things like that. And so we put that, you know, she had a similar background looking at a multimodal stuff at Google. And so we're like, well, let's try to build something that combines visual and textual generative AI. And this was like a little bit of a hack that we did, this kind of like a stunt. We made this site called Rick and Mortify. And Rick and Mortify, Demetrius, you might remember this, was a little like kind of toy thing that we were like, hey, we both like Rick and Morty. Let's see if we can do something with this, you know, kind of piggybacking off of our love for the show. We made this application where you could kind of pick out the characters that you want in, you know, your favorite characters from the show. You'd provide this little like textual premise for what you want a new episode of the show to look like. And then using generative AI in the background, both kind of LLMs, like traditional textual LLMs and visual LLMs, we created almost like a comic book of sorts where we generated the plot of a new episode, including the dialogue. And also, you know, for each episode or like little segment of that new episode, we would actually create a visual of that, what that would look like in terms of the actual like kind of image itself. And we put that out there and, you know, visual Gen AI was still kind of a thing. People were excited about this and people love Rick and Morty. So it kind of blew up. Like we were getting like tens of thousands of people using it. In a very short amount of time, we're like, holy crap, this is interesting. Like, maybe we should kind of pull on this thread. What getting distribution in that way enables you to do, and this is just, I think, a common problem in startups, is like distribution is always an issue. When you get distribution like that, you get reached out to and you have a lot of interesting conversations. One of the interesting conversations that fell out of that project is we were able to speak to a director, a screenwriter, who was like, hey, you guys are doing this thing. Storyboarding seems like something that could be interesting. And so we kind of went down this rabbit hole of trying to build like an AI-powered storyboarding tool, which used a lot of the same technology. And we did that. You know, we did it for a number of months. And that from that, we spawned off kind of a next succession of products that we're working on right now. But yeah, that really took us down. It was a little bit of piggybacking off of what we thought was an interesting set of problems, technically, combined with just following the rabbit hole of like opportunity, right? Where something shows up, you're like, well, I don't know what a storyboard is, but let's figure out what we can do with this. And we went back and forth with this person who's our advisor. So it was just happenstance meets capitalizing opportunity.
There were so many things that I wanted to ask on this.
Please.
Can I just say, just at the beginning of what you were talking about, founder dating, that is something that is so Silicon Valley, like San Francisco. I'm not sure if there are many other places in the world where it's just totally a normal thing to be founder dating. And you have like these things that you go through and you say, hey, you know what? Let's build something together because we're founder dating and you might be my match.
Yeah, exactly. That's right. Left swipe or right swipe or whatever it is.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm surprised nobody's made like a Tinder for founder dating.
You know what it is? I think the YC has a like co-founder matching service, which is the closest thing I've seen. They don't have an app though. It's like a web app. There's not a mobile app, but it's pretty close. It approximates a similar feel.
Yeah, that does feel like it. I mean, let's go into this idea of like building a business off of something, because just for the lay of the land, and especially when you were starting this business,
yeah,
there was Stable Diffusion, and it was probably when Stable Diffusion like 1.5 was out, and that was that was like the upgrade from the first one, and it was when things were getting really good and there was a lot of hype around it. And then Stable Diffusion 2.0 came out, and that's one option that you have. The other option is Dolly, which is all right, but not really that good. And I don't even know if they have an API. I don't even know what that looks like and how you can interact with Dolly, but it definitely didn't feel as good as Stable Diffusion 1.5. And then you have Midjourney, which is basically the one that takes the cake as far as quality goes.
Right.
But it's so hard to work with Midjourney because every time that I've tried to work with it, you have to go into Discord. And as far as I know, like, did they just open up an API, or is that still you have to work in Discord?
As far as I know, it's still in Discord. Yeah.
Oh my God. And yeah. Well, kudos to them because the products got way better because of that, because they're getting all that feedback and they're getting to know what people like. And that's why the Midjourney image generator right now is so superior to Stable Diffusion in every way, right?
I honestly think that the latest versions of like SDXL, I think, has really closed that gap. Like whatever has been done between, and maybe it's just the fact that the model got significantly larger on more data, higher quality data. I honestly suspect that's probably a big part of it. It is not, it's not like Midjourney is blowing them out of the water, to be perfectly honest.
Okay.
Yeah.
So it's feasible to build a business with Stable Diffusion now.
I think so. Yeah.
And the prompting is easier because I know that there's a ton of resources when it comes to Midjourney and prompting and being able to get solid prompts. And Stable Diffusion, there was a lot for 1.5. And you could also kind of get the same stuff when in the beginning, when it was like Stable Diffusion 1.5 and Midjourney. And then later on, it felt like prompting got way different for both of them, and you would have to have totally different prompting guides and ideas on the prompts. And so now what are you doing? Like, how are you hosting your own Stable Diffusion on your own cluster? And what does that look like?
Yeah. I mean, look, I like mad props to these companies for building out, Stability and Co. Midjourney is a little bit more of a walled garden, but I mean, they really just did kick off a huge influx of interest in these things for a while. And I think that really did push the field forward a lot. What I will say is it's, I don't think it's enough. It's like, you can't just use a vanilla SD model off the shelf and expect to have a business. That is certainly not true. And one of our realizations was that in spite of all the, I mean, it feels like years have passed, but really it's been like a year since Stable Diffusion came out. One of our big hypotheses now as a company is that the ecosystem around image generation, generative AI, and building applications around that is still very underdeveloped, right? So in a sense, it almost feels like a little bit like an MLOps play where you're recognizing that in order to enable a greater swath of developers and companies to build out image gen stuff, it's still not enough, right? Like, even though we have these suites of APIs, really just from Stability primarily. In DALL-E, yes, there's also an API, but you know, you have to build out something that's a little more extensive.
Yeah, so you can't build just a vanilla Stable Diffusion model, and it feels like the tools aren't there. And then you have what you need is more developer tools. But besides these like APIs that you have,
right,
or a suite of APIs, because with Midjourney you still don't have APIs, which is crazy to me. But
yeah.
Stable Diffusion or Stability has APIs
that you can use. Yeah, I mean, I think one of our realizations in starting to build out like a verticalized application of generative AI, which is what the storyboarding thing was, which is where we started and where we've evolved from, is that in spite of, yes, there being a suite of APIs out there, like, you know, you can leverage like a Stability, like your mileage may vary, right? And you have a lot less control over the kinds of models that you want to include. And you're not going to be able to do it with just an off-the-shelf Stable Diffusion model, right? Like, you're not going to be able to build an entire business off of that. You're going to have to fine-tune things. You're going to have to leverage LoRAs, a tremendous amount of LoRAs, and just to get that style that you want. So there's still a lot of adaptation that needs to happen. And once you have to adapt things, once you break out of that quick start shell they give you, it turns out that the ecosystem is not making it easy to get started and to do all that customization you want to do. And so, like, our hypothesis here is that there's, you know, we've one of the first things we started with is like, hey, you have an image generated, like, maybe you want to fix things up a little bit because they're not perfect, right? Like, and that's there's like a last mile problem of sorts that is actually critical when you deal with different kinds of verticals. They're not just going to take something that you generate from Midjourney or Stable Diffusion and take it as it is, right? They want to modify it a little bit. Maybe it's close, but not exactly close. And so, you know, our about this is that you really have to build out more of this ecosystem to enable things to be built, and primarily a developer ecosystem, because our hypothesis is also that you'll be able to, like, the future is all about building these multimodal applications that you need to provide something like a Stripe for visual generative AI, and that's a little bit where we're going.
Wait, Stripe for visual? I don't know if I understand that, but it sounds sexy as hell, man. Tell me more.
I mean, I add unicorn with another buzzword. How does it not sound amazing? No,
dude, where are these VCs? They're throwing money at you now, man.
Let me illustrate a little bit. I mean, you know, I think that little phrase is really just meant to try and clarify, but it ended up confusing. I mean, when you think of like Stripe when it came out and like, I guess I got to work on the analogy, but here's what I'll say. Here's what I'll say. But like Stripe, when it came out back in like, I think it was like 2009, maybe 2010, their big value add was like, you want to enable payments to be done on the internet, right? Any person who's building a bootstrap business, indie hacker, what have you, wants to build payments, but it's really hard to deal with like payment APIs. Like, it's just really, really hard to do so. And so Stripe made it like delightful to build payment into an application, because they gave you like, here's four lines, put it in there and it's just going to work. You know what I mean? And to have that kind of a guarantee in something like visual generative AI just doesn't exist today. It won't work. It won't be like, here's four lines and it just will work out of the box. It'll be like, hey, here's maybe four lines and it might give you 400 error where the server is not working and maybe the formatting of the thing isn't right, and good luck if your image looks the way you want it to. And so there's still a lot more finagling that needs to happen to get something to the point where it's exactly kind of what you have in your head. And so that's we want to get to the same level of, like, developer delight that Stripe offered
for software
to something that's like Gen AI, like visual Gen AI.
Yeah. You're talking like, yeah, the developer experience.
That's right.
Of
that's
Stripe.
Right. That's
I
right.
I see. I get it. And one thing that I was thinking about when you were talking about how the APIs that are there, yeah, stability is offering stuff, but it may not be what you want. And then the models that you can use aren't exactly what you need. And especially if you want to fine tune them.
Right.
And you want to use their API, then it gets even more complicated. And
right.
Have you looked into all these other basically API or model providers as a service type things? Like, doesn't Replicate or some of these paid places do that?
Yeah, yeah. I think that we're starting very pointed in our offering, right? I mean, the way we've done it is, I think a lot of the issue that maybe some businesses might fall into is they try and do everything. They try and like spread themselves a little too thin. You know what I mean? They're like, hey, we're going to, we have to support everything because our investors are knocking on our door and we need like a, we need like a, we need to offer a gazillion things because we have $100 million. You know what I mean? And that's just, that's a little bit of the signing away of your soul that you subscribe to when you raise a certain amount of money. So what ends up happening in the long run is you get a lot of breadth, not a lot of depth. And so what we're trying to do is start from just like a core suite of things that'll work, that we believe will provide value, and then iteratively build out in a way without really sacrificing and compromising the developer experience. So what we've done is, yes, we've released a suite of APIs around some core bits of functionality. We've done a lot of image editing stuff. We have some stuff in the pipeline right now around video, again, which we will iteratively and very slowly, deliberately roll out. But we're also doing that in tandem with showing people like what's possible. Like, if you have these things, what can you do? So in addition to these APIs that we've released, we've also built out applications. We're like, hey, you can build out like a, almost like an Adobe Express or Adobe Firefly, basically very easily. You know what I mean? Like you have these APIs and you can make an editor, in-browser editor that does exactly that. Or we did, like, once we had the APIs done, I was able to put a Discord bot almost, you know, that could literally be in the same channel as like a Midjourney bot in a matter of like a few hours, where I was like, hey, you can make a call to Midjourney, and then right afterwards you can call our Discord bot and you can iterate and fix up your images and do other things that maybe you can't do in Midjourney. So having a good bit of foundational scaffolding really enables you to build out applications so much faster, right? And that's really the bet here and what we believe needs to happen.
Because at the end of the day, what you see a lot of when it comes to the open source community around Stable Diffusion, I feel like, are those UIs, but you don't necessarily see it as many back-end pieces for the developers, right? And I think it was a lot of catering to that artist who was playing around on their computer and got some Google Collab GPUs for a limited amount of time. And then they're like, whoa, cool, I could do so much with this.
Right.
And then you get that UI and you're cool. And I also, there was one that I really liked for a while. I think it was called like Prompt Hunter or something like that, or Prompt Hunt.
Sure.
Maybe like Product Hunt, but Prompt Hunt. I can't remember the name exactly, but for a while you could swap out the different models that you were using. You could say like, okay, now I want to try this with Midjourney. I want to try this with Stable Diffusion. And it would give you clues and help on defining the prompts. And it would also give you different like tags. If you wanted to add stylistic features.
Right.
And that's incredible as the front end. But eventually they stopped offering Midjourney because I think they probably just ran into the same problem that everybody ran into. Having Midjourney work outside of Discord is really hard. What does that look like? How does that work? And so now what you're doing is, if I understand it correctly, you were like, all right, cool, I'm going to go on the back end. I'm going to host my own Stable Diffusion. I get the feeling you're using some AWS.
I mean, I have a very strong soft spot. I have a soft spot for AWS, of course. And love them. But, you know, we also, in a sense, we can be agnostic, right? It's not something where you have to be. I think a lot of businesses nowadays try to be multi-cloud anyway, because it gives you a lot of flexibility.
Yeah. And you're just offering the API and the UI, and then you're going upstream and being like, here's some cool stuff that you can build with this. So you're
Full
stack.
That's right. That's right. Exactly. It's like, hey, here's something you could, here's something that's powered by these building blocks. Like, here's some building blocks. Here's something that's powered by these building blocks. You might like that as well, but it doesn't have to be the only, you don't have to restrict your imagination to just a thing you run on your browser. You can go and build a Discord bot. You can go build, you know, a print on demand service. You can go build a what have you. I mean, there's like so many applications that you can just leverage. Go build a video game editor. You know what I mean? Like, there's just so many things that can fall out of this. So it's about giving those blocks and then maybe painting a little bit of the narrative around what that looks like.
Mm-hmm. What are some of the other things that you have thought about building in the different niche specific verticals?
Yeah. I mean, a lot of it is, it comes out of conversations that we get from customers and potential customers, right? Where we couldn't imagine some of the things that fall out of as use cases. Like, it's just some things that I would never even imagined. For example, one of the ones that came out that I thought was very unusual, but also very cool, is when someone was like, hey, I build a print on demand service. And what that effectively, what they're doing is they, to their consumer, to their user, it's like a platform, it's a UI where you can go and you can sort of like iterate on some image or some pattern that you want.
Yeah.
And then from that pattern, they will literally allow you to generate wrapping paper. And yeah, you can then get like custom delivered, you know, made and custom delivered to you. So you'll be like, hey, I want to picture Demetrius' face, you know, with like a Christmas sweater and make that like the MLOps community, like Christmas wrapping.
You should do that. Give me this URL. I'm going to do this.
I would do it. And I expect I would make a lot of money.
It's going to be our swag for the holidays.
That's right. That's right. Demetrius asks, have you been a good MLOps engineer? Like,
I know, if you've been naughty or nice, that is for sure.
So you know, that's the service they're offering. But for them, they were like, hey, we're maybe like a little bit light on the AI development front, but these APIs seem like they could really make our job of building out those images much easier, cleaning them up or kind of iterating on them. And then you can imagine that in a service like that, you're just like, our API is just plugging into their pipeline, right? Into their workflow, because the product is what they have. But you know, that's just like something that I would never even imagined. And we're getting like inbound from people that are like, what? I never thought that was a problem, but that's cool. I mean, like adding watermarks in some use cases, or people that are doing stuff related to like housing and SF, where they're trying to like extrapolate kind of the looks of new housing projects. It's like one thing I also want to call out is, and maybe, you know, we'll touch on this as well, is just like this idea that Gen AI is so hot right now. It's like Zoolander all over again, right? Like, it is so hot. And like, people are kind of moving from one thing to the other, right? Like, it did start with, in a sense, stability was like a thing, and then ChatGPT sort of came out, and then we had like Llama 2, so now like textual LLMs are like all the rage. But there's still like an ecosystem that has to be built out to really enable, to really like, in a sense, democratize a certain kind of technology. And a year that did not happen. Like, in the 6 months that people cared about Stable Diffusion, and then moved on to Llama 2 and you know, all this textual stuff. Like, we didn't get that ecosystem to really reap the benefits of what we have. Like, if you look at a lot of the tools that people use for interacting with state-of-the-art visual Gen AI models, just a few that come to mind that I'll just name drop here, like Automatic 1-on-1 is like an open source project. Comfy UI is like another open source project. I mean, these are great open source efforts. I really don't want to ding them. Like, they've done huge, you know, really helped the community in a lot of ways. But when you're looking at something that's a little more production ready, more stable, maybe a little more user-friendly, that can't be where we stop, right? That can't be where we stop in terms of offering ways of interacting in the ecosystem. We would run into those issues where we're like, I don't really know how to use this. Like, it's still really complicated. Like, you think Discord is complicated? Like, man, using some of these can be like really tricky, where you're just like watching YouTube tutorials for like hours.
Yeah.
I think this is how you do it. So it feels like there has to be a better solution, right?
Yeah. It's so funny because it is a lot of YouTube tutorials when you're going down that rabbit hole, and like, have this image of how I want it to look in my head, and I feel like I could get it there, but I don't know what to do to make it get there. And I remember at Stability, there were like the prompt experts and, dare I say, prompt engineers, right? And I would ping them every once in a while and be like, here's the photos that I'm getting. I want the tree to be inside the box, not like the box next to the tree. And here's the prompt I'm using. What do I have to do? And it really felt like they were just like, well, I'm gonna say that you probably should try and put tree inside the word box, or box inside the word tree, or put box and tree together. And you're like, what? This is not scientific at all. You're just throwing shit at the wall. Like, I will say, a lot of times that shit worked. And I was like, how do they know that? So, or they're like, put a hyphen between box and tree. And you're like, what? No way, that's going to work. And then you try it, and it's like, oh my God, that worked. So yeah, there's some funny things.
It's like hyperparameter tuning of yesteryear, you know, or I mean, like once upon a time, people would be like, you got to use an alpha learning rate of 0.001. You're like, what? Really? Because like, otherwise your loss is like this. And then you said 0.001, like it was like one decimal point over. And you're like, huh, that just works exactly the way I want it to. That's crazy.
Yeah, and it's very tribal knowledge to get there.
That's
right. You wouldn't know that unless you were working with someone who could help you, and you could ping and ask. Or you go into some community and you get lucky because the person who knows stumbles upon your question.
Right.
There's a lot of that. And so I can see that pain. And I can also see that potentially what happened was the hype moved on from the image generation tools. And so the ones who were left in the image generation world were people like yourself, and you're trying to figure it out, and you feel like, oh, well, I've got a pretty solid use case here.
Right.
I've got people that are interested. I'm doing something verticalized.
Right, right.
But then you hit a wall and you realize, maybe I need to go down a few levels and start building out the pipes before I can build the house, you know, like the foundation is not there yet. And so let's try and make that foundation, and then we can build on top of it.
I think that's exactly right. That's exactly right. Yeah.
It is funny though, because in the LLM space, I feel like you've seen a lot of people try and jump at building out the foundations, because it also feels like there's a lot more things that you need to do and areas that need to be improved, you know? whether it's latency, or whether it's truthfulness or trustworthiness, explainability, whatever it may be. And I also think that the beginning of the hype wave, you had so many people saying like, oh, we could use it for everything now.
Right.
It's for everything. Whatever you can dream up, you can do it with AI now. And basically... Now I feel like that's calmed down a bit, and we're starting to see, okay, there's these use cases that it works incredibly well with, and then there's other stuff where it was a little wishful thinking.
Right, right. It's a good point. And look, I've been in AI longer than this hype cycle, right? I mean, I got into this like well over a decade ago at this point. And so this is not like the first hype cycle I've seen in AI. Like when I went into AI, I mean, it was maybe like the first new modern hype cycle, like 2012 or so, when deep learning really became a thing again. And then maybe 2014, 2015, when maybe like machine translation systems really started getting good and people were able to translate languages, which was a big step forward, and speech recognition also got really good. And then maybe like 2017, there was also kind of another little wave that was happening. So iteratively, people, you know, it gets better, it gets bigger in terms of the wave. I would say this one, though, of the last like 1 to 2 years is like completely unlike anything I've seen. You know, it's like when I think largely a lot of it did come down to very easy to use consumer facing applications of AI, right? When you have something like a ChatGPT or like a DALL-E, where any layman can be like, have you heard of this ChatGTP thing? You know what I mean? It felt like when back in the day, like I remember this one, and this is like a little bit unrelated, but a story. The first time I was at a Thanksgiving dinner in like 2017, and random family friends are like, have you heard of this like Bitcoin thing? You're like,
yeah, I was going to say that.
Yeah. If they're asking about Bitcoin, like, you know, there's like a huge bubble of sorts that's happened here. And so maybe this is a little bit of a hot take. Like, I think there's going to be a correction in terms of the hype. And that's exactly what you've suggested, right? Is that it went from everything is possible to like, look, a lot of things are going to be great. Not maybe everything, but if you like start to ask yourself like the very deliberate question of where is this really going to shine, there's awesome stuff to build. Maybe not everything, but awesome stuff to build. And I think that
getting to that secondary question of what's the awesome stuff to build is maybe the contraction a little bit from the hype.
Yeah, I don't want to put this person on blast and say the name of the Twitter influencer that said this, but I just realized we were at peak hype when someone said on Twitter something like, I realize I'm in a cafe living in the future and look around. Nobody understands the effect that AI is going to have on our lives right now. It's like, dude, I mean, you're going to be able to summarize some shit and ask questions to your Notion database a little bit better, but I'm not sure we're talking like you're living in the future.
Yes, for sure.
Yeah. And who knows what it's going to be in 2 years. Hopefully, the amount of tooling and the amount of energy and the amount of building that is happening in this space will make a difference. But when I see that shit, I'm just like, ah, man, I either got to go outrageous on Twitter and start just following Drink the Kool-Aid and start saying shit like that, or I got to get off Twitter and save my mental health.
Yeah, you got to get new friends. No, it's a really good point too. I mean, we could probably spend another hour talking about that, but this site hype brings the rise of like new influencers. You know what I mean? That's like always happened. Every new hype cycle, there's like people that are like, oh man, like I should start talking about this. And then you have these people that have like never done anything in AI that are now the go-to sources for learning about AI.
Yeah,
and
I missed that one. I totally missed that one. That should have been me. I slept on my laurels. I'm the guy who knows nothing about AI, and then boom, I just saw the wave come and crash right in front of me.
No, but you know, it's like you have to learn to play that game. I think it's like, do you want to
want to play that game?
Exactly. Yeah. Is that something that you, because these people are like they'll have to tweet like 3 times a day, and they have to live on some of these social media platforms, and yeah, I don't want to ding them completely because it's good to spread information as long as it's the right information. It's a little bit as I don't want to call myself like OG, you know what I mean? But like someone that has been in the field a little bit longer, it is a little
because I don't want to call myself that, but I am.
I have written papers longer than this, right? And you know, like I was writing papers about this stuff before the fact. It's more that I just want to make sure that. When people are, I don't want like people that don't know what they're talking about to speak with so much
confidence,
until you like just at least don't blow things out of water. Like provide people nuance. Like there are people that have become influencers where I'm like, that's still legit. You're giving the nuanced version of the answer and you're not taking people off this weird hype train where like everyone is just like, this is amazing. Yeah, this is amazing. This is so amazing, right? Yeah, I know this is amazing, right? And you're just like, there's just like these people talking at each other being like, this is great, right? Yeah, this is totally great. You know what I mean? It's a little weird.
Yeah.
I feel like it's going to hurt the field in the long run, to be honest.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because it's going to set the expectations so high. And then when it takes another 5 years to get anywhere, I think even if where we are in 5 years is incredible and it's huge breakthroughs.
Right.
If it's not at the spot where it's like AI is completely taken over and we don't even have to work anymore.
Right.
Then people are going to be disappointed because
we've seen this, man. This was chatbots. Yeah. This was chatbots 2017. Yeah. This is exactly what happened. People were like, oh my God, chat everything. And then.
Which they suck.
It's that hype cycle, man. It's literally it goes up and then it goes down and then it kind of like gradually goes back up. Like I still think that more conversational AI, I mean, obviously I'm biased, but I still believe conversational AI has the potential to really help a lot of fast society. But when you have too much happening, too much excitement happening too quickly, people, get very inflated expectations and then they get disappointed when in reality, the science is still, like all this Gen AI stuff is amazing, but there's still hard research questions that need to be solved. You know, it's not completely commoditized. There's still a lot of things that researchers need to figure out to make this work.
Exactly. And economics.
Economics.
There's a lot of money being lost right now.
100%.
By the big players.
100%.
But also, I think one thing that I wanted to talk to you about a little bit, because you played in the Hollywood space, and sure. I know you have like 1 foot in LA and 1 foot in San Francisco.
Yeah.
I think the hype also brings a bit of a negative aspect in that regard, because right. people don't know what to believe, and so they right. expect that AI is going to take their job, and then you get right. writer strikes or you get whatever, and you don't recognize where it's at necessarily unless you really deep dive into it. Because if you just ask a few questions to ChatGPT, you could get the impression that, whoa, shit, like my job's gone tomorrow.
Right.
And so being in, like when you were hanging out in Hollywood, would you get a lot of people talking about how they were afraid or they would not menacing. Like the idea of this whole storyboarding tool with AI because it's going to put someone out of a job, the storyboarder out of a job, or what?
Yep. Yeah, for sure. For sure. Yeah. I mean, I was actually literally on a panel like 2 weeks ago at a film festival in LA. And so it was funny because the way the panel was constructed was it was like the AI people on the right side of the table, moderator in the middle, and then like Hollywood folks, producer, actor who was in like Marvel movies on the left. And it was just like us talking at each other. And man, were they coming at us. Like they were Ooh. Coming at us. Like they were like, what are we going to do? Like, what's going on? And this was, you know, this is like 8 or 9 months into, you know, like many months into the strike, right? I mean, yeah. and now it's thankfully come to a resolution of sorts. But yeah, I mean, look, that even this many months in, people are still like, we don't understand what's going on here. It feels like, what am I going to tell my crew when like all of a sudden, like, you know, they can't send their kids to private school or whatever, you know, it's things like that. like it just, and I don't mean to belittle the problems. I actually feel like that, you know, they're totally justified to feel concerned. I will say though that, as you said, it's like about hype makes people just how quickly they just get scared by things that are changing too fast. You know, yeah. like change has to come at like a net organic pace. It can't come just like, if it comes too quickly, people get scared. And that's what I think I saw happening definitely in Hollywood, was just a very traditional industry where it's been very much the same. You know, like the biggest, they got shaken up by Netflix, right, a few years back. And that was like them blowing their minds. Like, what do you mean Netflix? Like, what's going to, you know, what do you mean the streaming thing? Like, and that really turned them on their heads. That flavor of industry getting hit by ChatGPT, getting hit by DALL-E, getting hit by, you know, Midjourney, all these things. They're like, whoa, we don't move this quickly. You know what I mean? We're not, we can't accommodate that kind of change so quickly. But that being said, I think, so yeah, AI was a big sticking point in all these strikes, right? I mean, that was a thing they were all trying to get figured out. And I think a lot of it just comes down to misinformation. It really comes down to like education and just getting credit and attribution in a way that people get compensated for their work. I think that just has to, that piece, once that piece is figured out, I really think that the issues aren't as big as people are blowing them up to be. And then as you said as well, literally during this panel, people are like, but AI is coming. And I'm like, you guys don't understand how far AI is from like all the stuff that you're saying it will do. Like, this is like yeah. decades, you know, like in my opinion, yeah. right? Like, this is like, to get to that level, it's going to take a while. So it a lot of, there's like complex issues here at play, but I think that you can understand why they're coming at.
Yeah. And I mean, you did say something interesting there when it comes to the attribution.
Yeah.
That's a fascinating one. The other thing that it sparks in my mind is about videos itself and how we had ChatGPT, which went for the script writers or right. whatever, but it's pretty obvious that a script written by ChatGPT is probably not going to get greenlit for a film anytime soon. Or if it is, it's like tongue in cheek
right.
type thing.
Right.
You can brainstorm. If you're a script writer, it's probably a great tool to help you
right.
and your productivity. But it's not like, oh, write me a script about XYZ and now, boom, we've got a Hollywood blockbuster, at least in my mind. Maybe I'm wrong.
No, yeah.
That is way overhyped in my mind. And then you have the image generation, and there's all kinds of ways that you can use that within the greater film creation process.
Right.
So I do see how it's like, whoa, we just got hit on both sides of the coin with, now it's the writers, then it's the editors, or it is the creative directors in a way. And then if you add on video on top of that, I can see why people would be like, oh my God, it's coming, and it's coming right. for everything, every piece of this. But I also feel like video is really far off. As much as I do see, dude, like Runway ML is doing some incredible stuff.
Yep.
With just what it enables you to be able to do in video and with AI is absolutely amazing and mind-blowing. But I still don't think it's anywhere near, like, okay, now we don't need any visual effects people on our set, right?
No, definitely not. And I mean, yeah, we could go off on like how the world could play out, like even in the years, many years away when that is a reality, like what does that really mean for how content will be created, right? And I have some hypotheses. I don't think it's going to be, you know, people will still be a huge part of this process fundamentally. I mean, for me, and this is even what I said to these folks, at the festival, was like, look, you have to believe that there's something like fundamentally human about the arts. You have to believe that. If it's not true, then it will be replaced by AI because there's nothing fundamentally human about it. But like, you have to really, like, in your heart, believe that there is something that cannot be replaced, like a human, a sentiment, a human memory, like a human experience. And that's something that we have to imbue our systems with, or like, you know, kind of guide them into. Maybe they'll assistively help us play out a story or you know, kind of get to the point of acting out a story. But that has to be something that's lived in a more human fashion. So, I still do subscribe to that. And as you said, I mean, technology is, it's quite a ways away. I mean, yes, it's cool to have 10, 15 second clips that show some level of motion and something that's still very underdeveloped. And it's a hard, hard problem, right? I really suspect there's going to be more smaller segments of the puzzle of the value chain where we can start integrating some of these tools. It'll just make people more productive. I mean, that's really the goal here always. Like, AI is supposed to be assistive. It's not really supposed to replace these things or these people.
Yeah. And so that's your whole vision right now, is how do we build the building blocks to help that value chain? And if I'm understanding it correctly, you're trying to build something that is generalizable. So it's not only in the Hollywood vertical anymore. It's like, if you're building something for the Hollywood vertical, you could build with your tool as the basis, but it doesn't have to be in that vertical.
Yeah. It's something more horizontal. I mean, you know, there are certainly a few verticals where we suspect and we've seen a lot of resonance. I mean, video games for sure, entertainment, obviously, interior design, architecture, marketing. I mean, there's only ones where it comes a little more naturally, but again, we're not excluding ourselves because we get these things that show up at our doorstep, like print on demand, like, you know, housing project development and kind of construction. So just things that you really just didn't even anticipate. And so it is a little more like a horizontal layer for sure.
And what do you think about ML ops versus LLM ops? There's a new stack, right? And there's also prompting in the mix, and there's the evaluation. If it's LLMs, there's probably also the iteration if it's image gen. Like, where's your head at with respect to that?
I actually think that there was a post, I think Eugene Yan put out on Twitter that I actually quite liked, where he took, remember that old, I think it's the D. Scully paper from Google, which is like the old school Godfather paper, where it's like, hey, here's all the stuff around ML code, right?
Yeah, here's the technical debt that
here's
you
all
incur.
The, here's the technical debt.
Not the model.
Yep, exactly. And there's like 15 other boxes around, just like the little tiny, tiny little box that is the ML code. And he had replaced that very tongue-in-cheek with like LLM code. And I thought that was a good way to synthesize what I also agree with, which is, look, at the end of the day, all this stuff, like, yes, some of these models are bigger. So there is like challenges, maybe different MLOps challenges around, or the different infrastructure challenges around how do you host a 15 billion, 70 billion parameter model? Like, yes, that is hard. And that is not something that when we were doing logistic regression, you know, random forests 2 years ago, and that's how people were operating. So yes, it is a different infrastructure challenge that will be solved. So that is a slight difference. That being said, I think that a lot of the same concerns apply. Like, a lot of the exact same ones apply. I mean, data still ends up being the name of the game. Like, you read any of these papers coming out for how you're getting improved systems like DALL-E 3
and any new Gen AI system, like the novelty is still the data. They're like, we're getting better data, we're getting better captions, we're getting better this and that, and that's what people are still figuring out. So in a way, I feel like we've had some differences and we've progressed maybe a little bit, but do we really need like a whole new LLM ops thing, like new phrase, you know, phrase? Sounds like it's another VC sort of oriented thing.
It is totally.
And I would rather just say like it's ML ops with like, now there's a new model that we have to support. You know what I mean? And here's the interesting thing is like if you see a lot of these ML ops companies of the last two, you know, before LLMs became a thing, who were around for 2-3 years, who are pivoting very easily into LLM ops. Like they're just like, it's not like they had to like, holy crap, we need to go raise like another gazillion dollars.
Rethink our whole strategy. Yeah. Our product needs to.
Absolutely not. Like I was talking to Piero from Parybase, you know, a good friend, and you know, they had been doing Ludwig for years, right? At Uber, as the open source project. And then they built out, you know, this build business that was just traditional ML stuff. And I'm like, how is this changing anything? But he's like, really not at all. I mean, maybe a little bit of the copy on the landing page, but we have the building blocks have already built out. You know what I mean? So we're just, we just have more inbound now from people that are like, I don't know, AI, what is this LLM stuff? And so they're getting a lot more customer inbound, but fundamentally the technology is like exactly the same. You know what I mean?
100%. That is awesome to think about. The other piece, I was going to mention something, but you got me off track when you mentioned Piero, and I was thinking like, oh yeah, they just, you can pivot and say, now we do fine tuning instead of something else. Even everybody's got that story now. And so it's funny about that. And when it comes to that Eugene Yan post, I think D. Scully actually made a new blog post.
Oh, did he?
And that's what it was. That's what Eugene was referencing in that. And so, dude, incredible. Always a pleasure. I got to go to another meeting. Sadly, we got to do this more. Hopefully, we'll have you on soon enough to give us an update on how things are going. And if anyone wants to use the tool, we'll leave a link or you can tell us the URL right now.
Yeah, lab.storia.ai. Or if you, our company is Storia AI. If you want to, you can also reach out to me directly, just my name, Mihail@storia.ai, or you can just reach out to founders@storia.ai. We're happy to talk and learn about your use case and build cool stuff.
Boom. There we go, dude. All right, man. Thanks for doing this.
Hey, man. Thanks for inviting me. Really enjoyed it.